I talked about this on Friday's program, and it was on the Hartford Current website, and then it was published in the Current about what's going on with Danbury-based Fuel Cell, how it was left out of a particular state project after the state actually had helped to provide seed money over the years to Danbury Fuel Cell. And then perhaps you saw the story on the front page of the Current today by Dan, his column headlined "Lost Bid Sets Back Fuel Cell Effort." And we welcome Dan to the program. Dan, welcome to Front and Center.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I can't help you with franchise ownership, but I can talk about this.
Good. Well, what Dan, is actually going on here? And why was Fuel Cell left out of this?
Well, the short answer is that these were, to get the listeners caught up, these were bids for clean and renewable energy projects totaling 700 megawatts, which is a lot. That's more than 10% of you know, the amount that Connecticut is going to use. So this is toward the goal of 20% renewable fuel. And these were bids based on several factors, but price per kilowatt hour was the major one. And apparently, the solar and wind, mostly solar, but some wind projects that came in, all of which won all of the 700 megawatts, except for some efficiency by Eversource that was in there as well. They beat out Fuel Cell on price per kilowatt hour.
And as you wrote the other day, Fuel Cell had been planning on getting some action here, and it has really thrown the company for a loop. Talk about that.
Well, yes, the question is, for the company, they've been supported by the state with, among other things, a $30 million loan and grant package announced at last, the end of 2015. They've been expanding their factory. They've got about, they had about 600 employees, a little bit less, 580 in Connecticut, but they had a layoff after these bids of 96 people, and they've downgraded the amount of stuff they're going to make. Now, we as taxpayers and ratepayers should not worry about what a company is doing if it doesn't win a bid rightly. That's not our concern. In other words, if something bad happens to a company whose product or service is not price-worthy and of the right value, we shouldn't worry about that. The concern here is that in the big picture, the value for fuel cells may be more than for the solar project that won the award, because the solar projects that won the award come with some hidden costs that we're not seeing.
But when it comes to Fuel Cell, for example, their Torrington plant, which was supposedly robust, their Torrington plant is in trouble, wouldn't you say?
In trouble is probably too strong a word. Their expansion at the Torrington plant went into reverse when they had layoffs at both Torrington and Danbury, totaling 96 people. They still do have nearly 500 people at those two plants, and they're not about to shut down. So I wouldn't say in trouble. I would say that they're going in the wrong direction if they don't get these bids from the state of Connecticut. And again, looking at Fuel Cell as an alternative source of electricity generation in Connecticut, in the big picture, Fuel Cell delivers a lot to the state of Connecticut. For example, it replaces base load. You don't need to build other power plants. If you go with a solar megawatt, let's say 50 megawatts of solar, that doesn't replace any megawatts of baseload power plants that you have to build, because as you know, when the sun doesn't shine, they don't run. Fuel Cell, when you build a 50 megawatt plant, it runs, period. It's like a nuclear plant or any other larger traditional plant. It runs. And so that's one of the advantages. The other one you've already hit on, which is the employees. They pay taxes in Connecticut. And another one is land conservation. Fuel Cell tends to use smaller urban brownfield areas that have been reclaimed. It goes directly into the grid. Solar tends to use large tracts of farmland and forest land, precisely of the sort that the Department of Agriculture in Connecticut is spending money to try and preserve. So there are different ways of looking at the big picture.
So as you write, then, in this latest round, the state didn't pick any fuel cell companies?
Zero. There were, I believe, I counted 29 winners. Somebody could come up with that I miscounted. But let's say 29 winners, of which I counted 21 solar projects and 8 in wind. Plus there was the one, as I said, of Eversource, where their proposal was a conservation proposal, which obviously is just as good as generation if you can figure out ways to conserve. And so that's who won. You know, and again, I'm trying to look at the big picture and saying some, at least some of that fuel cell might have won if you're looking at the big picture economics.
What was the state's explanation then, again, for not picking a fuel cell company?
Price. They said that on price per kilowatt hour, what they said was that there are other areas in which other contracts for fuel cell work very well. When, for example, they're looking to give contracts that help on reliability as well as price. But in this case, they were really looking out for the pockets of the ratepayer, and I agree that that's an important consideration. I'd like to see what the final numbers are. When the deals are negotiated, we will see the numbers, and we will see how close fuel cell was and whether those other hidden costs pushed solar up over the price. The other thing about solar and the reason it won is because we're in a global glut of solar materials right now because the Chinese have been building this stuff like crazy. You may be aware there was a factory in East Windsor, STR Corporation.
Right.
They were making solar materials. They got put out of business by Chinese imports. So right now there's a glut. There's not a clear sense that glut is going to continue. The price of those solar materials may go up by the time these very plants get built. So these savings bid in might not exist. Now, to be fair, I could say some of the same things about fuel cell. So it's not an easy equation to look at.
Well, the fuel cell concept itself, I mean, what are the chances it's going to reach the stage where it is a pragmatic alternative?
Great question. I don't know that it's ever going to be a huge alternative, you know, replacing gas-fired plants. But a fuel cell, as you know, essentially is a battery, except that the battery gets a constant source of power so that it charges in and charges out. In comes, I shouldn't say power, it gets a constant source of fuel. So in comes natural gas and out comes CO2, water, heat, and electricity. And that's a pretty good equation if what you need is a relatively small, say, small citywide generation in places like old Fairfield County, for example, that don't have a lot of transmission capacity and that use a lot of electricity. So it has a very important niche use. Whether it can become a mass use, I don't know. But even just for those niches, that supports a lot of jobs in Connecticut if it's bid into the grid.
You see, I've always envisioned one of these fuel cells, for example, being able to power a Dunkin' Donuts park, let's say.
Yeah, well, actually, the Dunkin' Donuts park level for a fuel cell is smaller than the power plants that Fuel Cell Energy is building. Doosan in South Windsor, which is the successor to the United Technologies fuel cell business that they sold to another company that then sold to Doosan, which is a South Korean company. They're making fuel cells on that size level, right, that can power a stadium like that. That's what's called behind the meter. That is, the user is directly getting the juice. What Fuel Cell Energy is trying to do is get on the grid, and the advantages of that is they can plug directly into a substation. You don't have to build long transmission lines from places like Maine and far eastern Connecticut where the power is generated in solar projects. You can put it right where you want it in places like Bristol, New Haven, Bridgeport. But sure, there's no question that fuel cells have been used. Right now, until now, the cost of the equipment has been high enough that it's not a slam dunk. There's the pun.
well put. Now, Wall Street, apparently fuel cell took a hit on Wall Street with this latest news, right?
Fuel cell energy is not in an enviable position in respect to its stock price. The amount of cash they have on hand is actually greater than the total market value of the company. Now, that doesn't mean that somebody could come in and buy the company and harvest it for cash, because they also have debt, but it's getting close. It's not trading very well on Wall Street at all right now, and that's despite some triumphs that they had earlier in the year, including a joint project with Exxon to try and capture and cut down on CO2 emissions. So there have been some good things happening. You know, technology development is not smooth stuff. We read about, you know, Google and Snapchat and, you know, Xerox back in the 60s, and it looks automatic, quick, and like overnight. But it never is when you look on the ground.
What sense did you get when you talked to the fuel cell people about the company and even the company's future?
I think they're optimistic because they see that as the cost comes down for creating, the, you know, look, right now the key is how much does it cost to build this equipment? And can you amortize the savings that you realize on power over the life of that equipment? And, you know, until very recently, that equation has not worked favorably for fuel cell. There also is opposition to it in the sense that it does create significant greenhouse gases. You know, CO2 is a greenhouse gas. It's not a pollutant. It's not like nitrous, sulfur dioxide or nitrogen oxide, I think it is, NOx and SOx. You know, those are the coal-powered plants, and even gas and oil plants create these things that are essentially air pollution. It doesn't create air pollution in the way we grew up knowing it, but it does create CO2. All of that said, the bottom line is that as volume does increase, they're able to make it more and more cheaply per unit of power produced. In other words, you're measuring it. How much does it cost you to produce a piece of equipment that makes a megawatt? And as that price goes down, both because of technology advancements and because of volume, it becomes a better bargain for the buyer, whether the buyer is the grid or a large user such as Pfizer, which did buy a 5.6 megawatt station from Fuel Cell earlier this year.
Now, you talked about the state's plan, and the goal is to have 20% clean and renewable energy by 2020. Is the state going to reach that goal by 2020?
Yes. I didn't report the figure. I believe we're now approaching 15%. The 15% may be with these bids. Forgive me, I'm not sure whether the 15% was after these bids or before, and it makes a big difference. But yes, the short answer is yes, even though 2020 is only 3 or 4 years away, depending on what part of 2020 we're looking at, we are on track to make that goal.
So that said, are there other goals on the table to reach 30% by 2025 or 40%? There must be talk about that, right?
Oh, you know, for now, there's nothing legislative. I did ask the commissioner that, and this is the goal we're looking at now. And of course, we're always going to be looking at further goals. But at the moment, the concern in respect to power generation and renewables is not in Connecticut. It's elsewhere. And especially when you come to particle pollution, you know, most of the stuff that we're breathing from the impurities that we're breathing from power generation are most certainly not coming from Connecticut, both because of prevailing winds and because one single giant coal plant in the Midwest can blow over a whole bunch of, that's what the whole acid rain phenomenon was. So what we really need to work on is national policy, and unfortunately, with the current administration in both energy and environmental protection, I don't see that happening for the next 4 years. And that's a downside of what the election brought us in November.
But that doesn't mean that individual states can't tackle the issue, right?
Yeah, they can, but to the extent that their economies are based on these, exporting fuel power plants. I mean, there was a power plant back a few years when I was writing about these things. Connecticut was trying to put the so-called SUTY 6 out of business. You may remember those were the old oil-fired plants that were earlier generation that needed to be retired because they were very dirty. And I remember when you added up the entire emissions of all the SUTY 6, it came out to something like 1/50th the emissions of a single plant that was located in Illinois. And to the extent that these plants are part of the environmental ecosystem of those regions, it's very difficult to change direction. There's a coal industry that is, of course, struggling. I believe rightly so. I don't think there's a place for coal in the future. Some people do think there is, and that's part of the debate. And so it's not so easy to just snap your fingers and make things clean when the economy depends on something else.
Now, getting back to fuel cell, they do work overseas. Didn't they have a deal in South Korea?
Yes, the South Koreans have embraced fuel cell technology much more robustly. That's Doosan in South Windsor is South Korean-owned and operated. And they have a joint project in South Korea with a company that's using their equipment right there in South Korea, no question about it. And that's a good source of revenue for that company, and it's going to be going forward. Unfortunately, that's not manufacturing jobs in Connecticut. They're licensing the product and helping them in South Korea to make it, making money here, but not creating jobs in Connecticut to put the stuff together.
So is there any chance that Fuel Cell can get some kind of a bid from the state of Connecticut in the near future?
Yes, absolutely. The commissioner's adamant about that. He's going to look at the bid specifications. They're going to go over what went right in these bids, what went wrong. And there are other plans. As I said, there are other projects going forward. This is not a case of, you know, the game is over. The Commissioner of Economic and Community Development, Catherine Smith, made the point this is the first inning, not the ninth inning. Some people may say it's the third inning. I don't know. But at the very least, you don't have your closer up right now, and it's not the end of the game. And they make that point, and that's a good point to make. And I think the people at Fuel Cell Energy understand that as well and are not pessimistic.
The closer got traded anyway, so what difference does it make?
You know, if the Yankees had kept either Miller or Chapman, just one of them, they would have ended up in the playoffs.
Yep. Well, we'll see what happens this upcoming season. Dan, always a pleasure. Thanks very much for spending some time with us, and Merry Christmas, Happy New Year to you.
Thank you, Dan. Same to you. It's a pleasure being on.